Okay, we're now joined by offensive line assistant coach Rafe Maughan. Rafe, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for coming on the show. So college football is starting up Division I again this weekend. Do you have a favorite team that you want to root for this season?
Man, I don't know. I'm from Utah, so I always root for those guys. But just in general, I want good college football. So I watch everybody, all the conferences, all that good stuff. But yeah,
that's fair. How early did you get into it?
Get into football?
College football specifically.
Since I was a kid, it's been a way of life with our family. So kind of come from a football family. And yeah, since I was about 4 or 5 years old, I've been a fanatic of college and professional football.
I'm kind of the same way. Me and my dad would wake up and watch college game day every weekend, start every day at 12. I want to ask you, you've bounced around across football. You started all the way back at Snow. What was the experience like over there in Utah?
Great experience. Snow's a nationally ranked year in a year out program, and they get some quality guys coming through there every year. Ran a good program and got to work with some great guys and just develop them, get them moving on to higher levels and playing in the National Football League and all that good stuff. So
I want to ask about that. So you coach Garrett Bowles over there. We were just talking about that. How early could you see that he had league potential in him?
Yeah, honestly, he came in and was, the testing-wise, he hadn't played a whole lot of football yet, so there was some concern. But like I told you, it was about day three in an offensive staff meeting. Our OC asked, how's the Bowles kid doing? I was like, I think he's going to play for money someday. He's real coachable, and he latches on to everything you teach him. And, yeah, so it was pretty early on. We felt like he had the potential to, and then just his work ethic. You knew he was taking it to a different level, just how hard he would work in practice, out of practice. His whole life was really just – football.
And you said you moved a preseason All-American at one tackle over to the other side just to make room for him.
Yeah, so like I said, we had kind of an off-the-field issue. We were concerned with his knowledge of the game, and then it just had a suspension on a guy that, he had made an off-the-field error. And we put Garrett in for the first half, and he never let go of that position for the rest of his time with us.
Is he the best athlete you've ever coached?
That's the first all-conference offensive line, conference MVP from offensive line I've ever had or ever heard of. So he was a conference MVP, a first-team All-American. So, yeah, I'd say at offensive line, he's probably the best athlete I've ever had. Yeah.
How would you describe the football culture in Utah?
Man, it's there's a deep passion for it. I think it's a little delay that you hear about the love for football and in the South and in Texas and places like that. I think that Utah has grown to that level, that level of dedication, the off-season training, the focus, the specialization of sports. For a lot of years, it was kind of a really big multi-sport state, and now you see you guys just gravitating to specializing in football. I don't know if that's always for the better, but there's just a lot more put into it now. But yeah, I would say Utah is a big time football state, and what you find there more often than anything is you find bigs. You got great O-line, D-line, backers, tight ends, those box players in Utah, quite a bit of them. But yeah,
you're someone who I've talked to off air that's had such a great knowledge of JUCO and the system that goes through it. What were some of the biggest lessons you learned about junior college football from your time at Snow?
Yeah, I think I played JUCO football, and so I think I have a little bit different perspective than some that just coach it. I think the biggest thing is just understand that these athletes, even though they look like grown men and creatures running the earth, they're still kids. And so a big part of what we do is bringing them along, maturing them as men. And so like week one in JUCO football, people are, there's a lot of penalties. There's a lot of, guys that are not on special teams and whatever. That's a natural thing because these are just young guys learning how to perform at a college level. So the biggest thing I've learned is just keep teaching. Like, you have to teach. You can't ever, dismiss a young man because, they've made errors or whatever. And so create a culture for them to fail. I always say play to win, not play not to lose. And that's really what my focus is with the young men in junior college specifically, is these are college freshmen, sophomores that they don't have the benefit of senior leadership to teach them how to do everything. They need us as coaches to be that model for them until at which point they take it for themselves. And then when you get those teams leading player-driven societies in JUCO, those are national title teams.
I want to ask about that, actually. So, as you mentioned, there's no seniors, there's no real upperclassmen in this team. So when you see guys kind of step up and become leaders throughout practice, throughout games, how proud do you feel about that?
Oh, man, it's the joy in your heart, because that's really what you're working for every day, is everybody's preaching, the techniques, the fundamentals of the game. That's part of football, but the part that really, again, takes you to a championship level is when the players start driving the tempo. They're the ones demanding perfection, and they start, you know, becoming a coach on the field, and that becomes contagious, and then the whole team starts doing it, and it's like that. Those are the groups that are going to go on and lead and do great things because they're going to do everything right, and they're holding themselves accountable, not just coaches doing it.
So one of the things that I noticed that you really hold these players accountable for is just to communicate mm-hmm. on the field. How important is that?
Oh, man, that's most of the battle. Again, like a lot of people are teaching the same scheme. They're teaching the same, fundamentals. But what it comes down to is are we all on the same page? And that's, you talk about 111 football. Offensive football is 111. Every man on that field has to do his job, his part of the whole puzzle. And if we're not communicating effectively, if we're not, vocal and really deliberate in it, there's chance for error for one of those pieces of the puzzle to fall out. And that's, we preach it because that's offensive ball. What you got
to
do.
Who are some of the guys who have really taken that communication all the time to heart?
As far as from an offensive standpoint,
yeah.
I think our quarterback Jalen is doing a great job of leading, and I think he does you can see the difference when he's taking series in practice. You just see a more crisp version of what we can be. I think up front we have some good leaders in action. Sione Pulu is our center, absolute stud. He does a great job of getting our fronts ID'd, targeting us in run game and protection. Tavarius Sanders is another one that has kind of taken on an emotional. He's a real good emotional charge for us up front, being real physical. And I mean, you watch the kid's highlight from week one; it's like 15 different, pancakes leveling dudes in space and run game and throw game. So he's another leader for us. And then I think by example, we have a lot of young guys lead by example, not really having their voice just yet early on, but we're developing a bunch of other guys to kind of be the voice along with their hard work, their dedication and detail to the game.
Can I ask about Tavarion, actually? Comes over from Independence. What were some of the things that you liked, what you saw from him last year?
Well, I think a big thing is just the physicality in him. I mean, the kid's a big man that moves quick. But he's got a passion for the game, and he responds to challenges really well. I mean, the big thing, you can see him physically and say, man, that guy looks like an SEC caliber guard. He has the ability to play tackle, so he's kind of what we call a swing guy. He has the ability to play both, but really he's best utilized for us, pulling, being inside on inside run stuff, setting a double team, doing great things like that. So, but like I said, I love his physicality. I love his ability to be coached and respond. And then, he does some big plays, gets other guys kind of amped up, and, it's contagious with him. So, yeah, big fan of what Tavarian's doing.
Just to run me through that first touchdown that you guys had in the second half on the James Jones run. I believe you ran him on a trap to the outside, mm-hmm. and it completely blew open a hole. I think you blocked two guys on the play. Yeah. What'd you see in that?
Yeah, so we had just a kind of a C-gap, a little crash pressure coming off on counter, and obviously it's not ideal because, you got a puller for the kick out and one rolling through. And he saw two guys and saw an opportunity. He just kind of pinned the inside and pressed him into the outside cat and just opened up enough hole, enough space there for James to get vertical and do what James does. So, yeah, that's one of many plays where Tavarian kind of just, he reset or the gap. He displaced those guys enough to kind of reset by a whole gap to open up some space.
As far as Sione goes, true freshman, correct?
True freshman, yep.
True freshman playing in his first game. Obviously, you mentioned he's got a lot of responsibility, communicates very well. How do you think he handled the pressure?
I think he did well, honestly. The story on Sione is funny because he came out of high school and he was playing at a high school not, 10, 15 minutes from where I was living. So I actually watched him play his senior year, decided to sit out a year. He was about 440. He's actually built his body, reduced that weight down to about 360 right now and moving really, really well. And so he's put a lot into getting his body right to be able to have this opportunity. And I mean, you watch the film and the guy's going to have, a Power 5 offer. The way he operates, just as a human being, but as a player, communication, he's a great leader. So, I think he handled it well. I think he did exactly what we needed him to do to, especially respond in that second half and kind of, if you watch that game, you saw that third, fourth quarter, that run game, the power run game, the gap scheme stuff just really start to open up. And a lot was just him directing traffic, making sure we were right. And then also, again, taking on some of those back blocks and things that he just displaced guys so effectively.
So I got to ask about that first game. Mm-hmm. 203 yards on the ground, average roughly 4.5 yards per carry.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you were expecting after fall camp?
I wanted more, man.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Honestly, I think this group, being young, and again, that whole group, really, aside from Tavarian doesn't really have college experience or any games under their belt. And so I think at times moments, got a little big for us. We didn't go through our progression the way that we wanted to. They were kind of just trying to play. But I think they settled down the second half, and that's where we got a lot more production, right? So I wanted more. I was hoping for more, and we're definitely going to strive for perfection every game. I always tell them every week, hey, I know perfection is not really possible, but we're going to strive for it, and we're going to demand it so that we get as close to it as we can. So we're going to get a lot better from week one to week two to week three and so on and so forth. So.
Was there another coach or another player that kind of built those high standards into you?
Oh, man, I'm going to go back to my high school. My guy Holger Hansen was my high school offensive line coach. He played for the Chiefs back in the 70s. And he was just so demanding in terms of fundamentals and communication. And then he was a big toughness guy. I mean, he was just about playing tough and understanding that, being able to move a guy from point A to point B, against his will is an honor, and it should be a joy to do it. So I had him, and then I had another really good guy, John Hunter, played in the league a bunch of years. He was a big old 6'8", 315. He was a punter too. So he's, kind of an athlete, big guy. And so he was big on, fundamentals, but, I think the psychology of the game, he was really great in teaching, motivation tools for the group and targeting individuals to like see what their motivating factors were. And I took that from him as a coach. Is like, hey, you know what? I need to treat every player, as they need to be treated, they need to be coached to truly motivate them properly. So I don't ever use a blanket kind of one size fits all. And a lot of that comes back to John Hunter just teaching that concept to me.
Did you say he was 6'8"?
Oh, yeah. So he played at BYU back in the national title year, which, a lot of people up here probably don't care about BYU, but it's the one year BYU won the national championship, and he was a guard there. But like I said, he's just a giant. I mean, 6'8", 315, played with the Falcons. He bounced around like the Packers and Seahawks. But, I always go back to he was a giant, but he also was like a punter on the team. So it's kind of funny to watch him move. He's just a good athlete. So
I was going to say, I don't think I've ever seen a 6'8 punter. My punter in Miami was like 6'4", I want to say. And I thought that was huge, but 6'8 is ridiculous. I wanted to ask, I asked you the other day about some of the adjustments that you guys made from first half to second half based on some of the blitzes that Butler was giving you. How impressed were you of your team's ability to adapt on the fly?
Yeah, really impressed. Like I said, the film that we'd seen from the prior two games with Butler, with Ryan as the offensive coordinator, didn't see the same numbers that they were sending. I mean, they kind of brought the house a couple times on us that we weren't really expecting. And I thought our guys did a really good job of coming on the sideline, drawing it up with them, and then just responding. And, and like I said, it goes back to preaching communication, because you're not going to be able to pick up those pressures and kind of have the results that we had if you're not talking it through. And so they were doing a great job of that on the field. So, yeah, I was really proud of what they did. I think there's still a lot of cleanup we can do to make sure that, as the season goes on, we're even cleaner and better in handling those 6- and 7-man pressures. But, like I said, we did enough to win, and we're grateful for that. But we're definitely going to get better at it and cleaner and see things earlier.
So. From day one to now, or, a little over a month since camp kicked off back on August 1st, you got a group of players who haven't played with each other before that have come together to kind of become a unit. What's been the biggest thing about these guys coming together and learning to play as one?
What's been the biggest factor in that?
Yeah.
I just think, like I said, it's early on, it's the tone that's set by coaching. The preaching of, it's five guys doing one job. And like I said, the biggest, I guess the way I look at it is it's on them. The appreciation, the reward of that goes to them, because they're the ones actually doing the work to try and become tighter and tighter. And like I said, spending time together off the field. We got a lot of guys that will, call me up and say, hey, coach, we're going to the field in off time when we have practice. Practice is over, or maybe it's a Saturday, Sunday. So I think they're uniting that way to go in and get their own work. But then, I said, hey, man, I'm here too. If you guys want, I'll stop by and give you some pointers, whatever. And so they'll reach out. But like I said, it's them doing it for themselves. But like I said, that was kind of what we talked about day one, is in order for us to go, our team will go as we go as an offensive line. And they've bought into that philosophy, and they've kind of taken that and run. And like I said, there's still growth there. And like, we still have growth to go. And I'm excited to see when we kind of hit that ultimate leadership from that group.
So these guys are going out on off days to keep getting better.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How proud does that make you as a coach?
Oh, very proud. Like I said, I was almost upset with them. They didn't call me the first couple times. I was like, oh, you guys going? I'm around. I'll come hang out, you know? So, and we don't have the limitations in JUCO like they do as far as, you know, like the time allowed at the next level. And so, you know, we have the freedom to kind of get some more one-on-one training. You know, there's days that, like, we'll go out with just the centers. Like the other day we had the centers and quarterbacks in for our protection meeting, you know, just doing extra things to make sure we're clean and getting better. But like I said, I've had days where it's just tackles. We've had, you know, so like I said, it's that individual work, but they're the ones pushing that tempo, asking for it. And like I said, I'd gladly go out and help them and really, really proud of the extra work.
I know it's your first year in this staff, but you mentioned before you've coached against a lot of the guys that are in this staff as well. Yeah. Can you talk about what some of the other coaches bring?
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, Coach Minnick, you know, he was down at Arizona Western when we were out of snow. So coached against him and always had a lot of respect for him. And you know, I think it's mutual. That's why I'm here. He, you know, called me throughout the years and said, I don't know how you did what you did with those guys up front, but I want you to come do it for me. And we finally were able to sync up and work together. But yeah, just a coach that has a long-standing tradition of just winning. Like, you know, this honestly, in what, 30 years, this is his first losing season last year, which is unfortunate. A lot of outside factors that kind of contributed. But, yeah, just a great history there. And like I said, great tradition of winning from Coach Minnick, from all of his teams, wherever he's been. Coach Felker, like I said, when he was at Mesa, man, the guy could put up numbers. I mean, those offenses would just – it was going to be a shootout, you know, and it's going to kind of come down to, you know, who made that one turnover, who made that one stop, to see who was winning that. But like I said, our offenses would always kind of go head-to-head, and those were always, you know, 40-plus point games on both sides of the ball. So a lot of respect for him. And then just off the field, Coach Felker and I have known each other for years, and, you know, we go to clinics and different places and spend time, talk philosophy. So just syncing up really well with him. So, yeah.
How would you describe working day in, day out with Coach Felker, Coach Van Dame amongst the offensive staff?
Day-to-day, we have a really good mesh together. You know, Coach Minnick's also the running backs coach, so he's kind of in that mix as far as an offensive staff. But like I said, I think everybody respects the ability and knowledge and everything of each other. And I think we do a good job of kind of meshing this together to get the best product possible. And then the other thing is, I don't think there's a whole lot of ego there to where it's like, hey, if something doesn't work, like, for example, we kind of you know, we're working a concept, and maybe from a formation standpoint of how I did it in run game, Coach Felker felt like, hey, maybe we could do it by adjusting one receiver. You know, it's like, yeah, let's talk about it. Let's go back, draw it up. Let's see what the best look is. And then let's go with that, you know, game time. And, some other staffs have been a part of, sometimes it's like, nope, my way's the highway. This is what we're going to do. It's kind of like, no, let's just keep talking at the end. Let's do it the greater good. We're going to work with whatever is the best situation for us overall. And all coaches kind of have that mindset, is like, what do we need to do to win and put our kids in the best situation and throw the ego out the window? So, yeah, it's been really, really good.
Final couple questions for you. Thank you so much, Rafe Mon, for coming on today. First thing I want to ask, so you mentioned that you've played in the JUCO level.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that you learned that you really wanted to relay, I should say, to some of these guys?
Yeah, so from my playing to what I want these guys to understand with the JUCO, it's not even the playing side, really. It's more about... they're here because of one of a few scenarios, right? Maybe they were under-recruited. Maybe they had academic struggles. Maybe they had something off the field that was, I jokingly call it a glitch. But it's becoming a man in order to have every opportunity available to you in the future. So a lot of guys, if they're repeating the mistakes of the academics, it's like, well, why are we here? Understand why you're here. And the biggest thing is we are working not just to recruit guys in and develop them here, but it's to recruit them out, and we got to make them a recruitable athlete. And so it's constantly preaching the maturity side of things. You know, the phrase I use is be a pro. Like, what does a professional look like? How do they behave? You know, what's important to them in order to meet their goals? And it's not just about, let's just get a Division I offer. It's, let's get you the best possible program and situation. And it's only going to come from having the best academic, you know, because, you know, no matter how good you are on the field, no matter how strong you are, you know, all that fast, all that stuff, if you don't have the academics, you're not a recruitable athlete. They can't do anything for you. So the biggest lesson I learned in JUCO was, you're there for one of a few different reasons. Let's fix those issues now, so that when you get to that place, you are a guy that they trust and feel like you can plug and play now, because that's essentially why people go to junior colleges to find athletes, is I need a guy now. And they can't afford to miss on you. So, you know, make yourself unmissable. You know, you make yourself to be the guy that is ready to go. So I talk about being a pro. And like I said, it just goes back to what we talked about earlier, is, you know, our job here isn't just coaching, it is developing young men. It's guiding them. It's modeling the behavior that we need them to have. and then holding them at a really, really high standard so that they can achieve all their goals at the highest level, not just move on.
Is it bittersweet for you sometimes? I mean, you take these players in, you know, they have these glitches. They play for you for a year. You know, kind of iron out the mistakes in their game. You turn them into better players, better professionals. But then, you know, after a year, maybe 2 years, they leave. Is it bittersweet?
I don't know if it's bittersweet. Like, I know that, I mean, going into it, that's what you're doing. It's really exciting to watch our guys move on and achieve their goals and everything like that. You know, essentially their dreams come true. I don't have any, the bitter side of it. It's just like, yeah, I'd love to have them because, like, you know, especially at the O-line position, it's a really tight-knit group in most places, right? So you build a lot more than just a coach-player relationship. There's truly a lifelong friendship that's built, but, you know, truly, you know, with your friends, you want to see them go on and do great things, and so you get excited for them. So any guy that you have that, you know, has the ability to move on and keep playing, I'm excited. Even a guy that's a qualifier that maybe got under-recruited and I get him for a year when I thought I'm having for two, honestly, man, I'm just excited to see them, you know, fulfill their dreams. So, yeah, I'm the biggest cheerleader when they get out of here.
So last question for you. After such a strong first month, you cap it off with a win against Butler. What's the key to keeping this consistent improvement throughout the season?
Yeah, I think just holding the standard, holding the bar extra high, and then, like I said, that the concept of we may never achieve perfection, but we're going to strive for it daily, that as a constant reminder day in and day out. And then, like I said, we always talk about being honest and authentic with ourselves, like being authentic of where we're at, what's our effort, you know, where we need improvement, and then kind of dialing that in and just I mean, it's just a day by day. You hear in football, respect the process. That's what it is. The process is, it's the detail, the work, it's the passion, you know, all that kind of boiled into one phrase. But, yeah, we just trust the process and keep grinding, doing what we do. And you're going to look back at the end of the season and see a far different, you know, result as a team, as an offense, as, you know, as an individual all the way across the board.
Coach, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. Best of luck this weekend against Iowa Central.
You bet, my man. Appreciate you having me.